A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at schwabious.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you through topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and I am finally back from my long travels across the Midwest. That's right, all the way to Chicago, all the way to La Crosse, Wisconsin, all the way to Eau Claire, and now back to right around Minneapolis, you know, back here in Minnesota. It was a good time, lots of fun, and I was able to catch all the stuff we're going to be talking about on the podcast today amidst my travels. Of course, we're going to be recovering from the weekend, if I'm being honest, but we're going to be recapping UFC Perth. I did probably one of the best events I've ever predicted, and the two fights I got wrong, I literally should have known better. Of course, with the upset of Neil Magny, which there was controversy, I might add, of course, Dominic Reyes, unfortunately, being put to sleep rather quickly. But we'll be talking about every single matchup in depth, talking about what's next for the fighters on today's episode, as well recapping week four of the NFL season. And as we head into Monday Night Football, I already know that I will not be winning in my big 16-man league, which in my mind is my main league, because that's where I have the most money on, and it's with all 15 of my friends. So that's rather unfortunate. I'll be talking about maybe some of my fantasy teams, but more so just top fantasy performances and how every team is standing. Also, have Dana White's Contender Series 9.8. That's right, we're already on episode 8 of this season. Only 3 episodes left. Going to be dropping our predictions for that episode. Of course, new UFC fights is what we open with every single time. A lot of exciting stuff going on in the world, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be keeping you all updated on the moving pieces in my life. But let's get into some new UFC fights, because we have a lot. Let me tell you, I have 11 new UFC fights to share with you guys, starting with none other than, I can't believe we didn't discuss this last time we were on the podcast, but Charles Oliveira is taking on Matheus Gamrot in the main event on October 11th in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. That is right. Unfortunately, Rafael Fiziev got injured, had to pull out. Who steps in? Matheus Gamrot. And honestly, this is the number 4 and number 8 matchup. I really like this. I do think this is an adverse of what Rafael Fiziev versus Oliveira was going to be, because in that fight, you were much more so be worried about Fiziev getting a knockout. Here, there really isn't a threat of a finish from Matheus Gamrot, and I'm just going to be blatantly honest, we haven't seen it in a long time. And I think, if anything, you're going to see Charles Oliveira maybe land a knockout, maybe land a submission. I think this fight is a tinge easier for Charles Oliveira, but certainly just avoiding being grappled to death at the end of the day is going to be the name of the game. But this is the biggest opportunity for Matheus Gamrot in his career. He has worked his way back since being fraud checked by Benil Dariush, and I'm excited to see how he does against Charles Oliveira. But that is the main event, October 11th in Rio de Janeiro. It's kind of a shame that of our two beautiful fight nights in Rio and Vancouver, we both lost part of the main events, yet we've still been able to recover. As you know, we lost Anthony Hernandez, in steps Brendan Allen to take on Randy Ritter. We lose Rafael Fiziev, in steps Matheus Gamrot to take on Charles Oliveira. So, new main event, and we'll be watching that in, I believe, 12 days? It's almost my birthday. It's my birthday in 2 days. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? Everyone wish me a happy birthday, please. Next up, you have UFC Rio getting a new matchup on the prelims. So random. Salmon Oliveira, who is 0-3 in the UFC, who has no notable wins, 18-6 professionally. He is in his late 30s. He's taken on Leon Lacerda, who is 0-2 in the UFC. Unreal. I have no idea how both these guys are still in the company. They must have some dirt on Hunter and Dana, for goodness sakes. But yeah, Salmon, Leon Lacerda. I'm probably going to go with Leon Lacerda, being that he trains at Nova Unio, and Nova Unio is a very good gym. We're actually going to be mentioning a fighter on Dana White's Contender Series who's going to be fighting out of there. So, Leon Lacerda, Salmon Oliveira, it is about as low level as you can get. But I can't lie, Leon Lacerda kind of looks like Ron Gracie, and Salmon Oliveira kind of looks like Andre Feely in a weird way. But yeah, that matchup will be going down at UFC Rio. Should be interesting. Following that, we have a new matchup being announced for UFC Vegas 111 going down November 8th. In the women's strawweight division, the number 13th ranked Tisha the Tiny Tornado Pennington, who is actually the wife of Hockwell Pennington, former women's bantamweight champion, takes on the number 15th ranked Denise Gomez. Denise, back in the win column, I believe she beat Eduarda Mora. If I'm not mistaken, she beat someone, I recall, as of late. And yeah, back in the rankings, now getting a good opportunity here. Tisha Pennington is one of the most boring fighters. I think it's her. She's had out of her, I think it's 18 UFC fights, no finishes or something like that. It's something ridiculous. It might be someone else who I'm thinking of, but Tisha Penton, Nice Gomez, if you're interested in it, it's going down at UFC Vegas 111, and it might be on the main card. I do think that I would put this on the main card if I had to. Another woman's matchup, this one for the weekend before UFC Vegas 110, November 1st, Talita Allen Carr, who is 6-1-1, 2-1 in the UFC, takes on Ariana Carnelosi, who is 3-2 in the UFC, 15-3 professionally. Yeah, decent matchup. Ariana Carnelosi, I had her beating Ketlyn Souza, and she somehow beat her, which was pretty shocking. As for Talita Allen Carr, was able to get the better of Ryana Dos Santos and Vanessa Dimopoulos last two times out, so we'll see how she does as she progresses in the UFC. But yeah, decent matchup. Will be on the prelims. I'm not going to hate on it too much, if I'm being honest. On UFC Vegas 111, we're just jumping around here. Ricky Simon back in action. He's riding a win streak now. Now he's knocked off Javed Basharat. He knocked off a up-and-comer last time out, I cannot remember who it was. Was it Damon Blackshear? Might have been. I can't even remember. He's taking on Randy Barcelos now. Randy Barcelos, of course, beat Cody Garbrandt last time out, the ultimate gatekeeper. He's beating Cody Garbrandt and Peyton Talbot and Saeed Nurmagomedov. This dude is a killer. This should be a fun matchup, but I do ride with Ricky Simon in this one. I think Ricky Simon is better stylistically than Randy Barcelos. They kind of fight a similar style. They can use grappling. They also have their hands. So it should be a good one. I'd put this on the main card if you see Vegas 111. Decent matchmaking. I really like it. Same card, UFC Vegas 111. All these fights are coming out today. November 8th, you got Adrian Yanez finally back. I generally cannot remember the last time I saw Adrian Yanez fight. I have no idea. This dude was on the come up. You know, he was on fire. He's coming in 5-0 in the UFC. Runs into Rob Font. All right. And then runs into other competition. Is now, I believe he's 1-3 in his last four. So this was a good bounce back fight for him as he takes on Christian Quiñones. Christian Quiñones ultimately has taken on Sugar Sean O'Malley, if I'm not mistaken. I might be thinking of someone else, but holds win over Vinicius Oliveira. No idea how he is someone who's beaten Vinicius Oliveira, but he has. Look, this is a lay-up fight being given to Adrian Yanez here, looking to get him back in the win category. And it's, you know, he's 31 years old. There is still time for him to make magic happen in the men's bantamweight division, but if you can't get best Christian Quiñones, which is literally a layup, this is a basketball layup wide open on the court practicing for Adrian Yanez. Hopefully he can execute. New matchup as well for UFC Vegas 112 ending the year. Heavyweight division, heavyweight fights, so rare nowadays. Sean Sheriff getting another shot in the UFC as he takes on the debuting Stephen Concrete Asplund. Stephen recently knocked off, I believe it was Anthony Garcia on the Contender Series. I know he won on the Contender Series, I just can't remember against two. And he starched his opponent, beat him in like 16 seconds or something ridiculous like that. Had a crazy call out, and they're already trying to get him back in the UFC. And they got Sean Sheriff here. Look, Sean's 4-1. Lost his debut to who knows whoever he took on. It might have been Kenny Chukwu, to be honest. And he's obviously not UFC caliber, but I don't think the UFC has sold that Stephen Asplund is UFC caliber as well. So this is a great feeler out fight. Does Sean just have a unfortunate short notice debut with less experience, or is Stephen Asplund really as good as people say he is? So UFC Vegas 112, that's a fun matchup. December 13th, I will be tuning in for that fight. UFC Vegas 110, we're back to November 1st. Jeremiah Wells, wow, still in the UFC. He's 4-2, getting another matchup here as he takes on Themba Gorimba. Now, Themba Gorimba, he's decently good. You know, holds wins over Nico Price, Ramiz Brahimaj, and to be fair, his last loss was to Vicente Luque, which isn't that bad. You know, I know we look at the Vicente Luque, who Kevin Allard make easy work of, who Jeff Neal knocked out, who Bilal Hamid starched. But at the end of the day, Themba Gorimba took on Vicente Luque, who is still dangerous. So I don't really want to knock him that much. I do think this is a winnable fight for Themba Gorimba. And oddly enough, Jeremiah Wells is somehow 39 years old. I have no idea how he just became 39, but he'll be taking this fight like 2 days after his birthday. So hopefully Jeremiah Wells could give himself a late birthday present and pick up the win here November 1st, but Themba Gorimba will maybe be the answer to his problems. I don't know what that was. I was trying to create an analogy. Didn't really work. And speaking of the man, Vicente Luque, he's got himself a new opponent for UFC Rio as he'll be taking on Joel Alvarez, baby. And Look, Joe Alvarez stepping in for Santiago Ponzinibbio, which I had Vicente Luque beating Santiago Ponzinibbio in that real fight. Unfortunately, he's taking out Joe Alvarez, who is coming up in weight. So let's not overlook the fact Joe Alvarez is moving up from lightweight to welterweight because he had issues making weight. So he will be dealing with a certain different type of weight difference there. But I can't lie. I really do think Joe Alvarez should get through Vicente Luque. There was a point in time Vicente Luque was on his way to fighting for championships. Unfortunately, now he's kind of in a gatekeeper position. So we'll see what happens. But Joe Alvarez also is notoriously known for having a 22-3 professional record, and all 22 of his wins are by finish. So this dude is a finisher at heart. He's taking out Elvis Brenner, Jakar Close, Thiago Moises as of late. I'm excited to see this one when it takes place. Two more fights for you. First one, UFC Qatar going down November 22nd has a new matchup as Jose Luis is out. In will step Denzel Luke Fox Freeman. Denzel Freeman coming into the UFC to take on Marik Bujalabulicho. Both men are making their debut. I don't know a lick about them, but fun fact, Denzel Freeman is the only man to beat Steven Asplund, who we recently talked about. So maybe he'll be as good of a man to beat Marik Bujalabulicho. But just on appearance, Marik Bujalabulicho has the build of someone who I could see creating a tear in the UFC. And this is just off of build alone, which means nothing. If you look at Roy Nelson, perfect example of having a ripped body, doesn't mean you can actually fight. But hey, two unranked heavyweights, we'll revisit this in 2 months. We'll give an analysis. And the final matchup to bring to you guys, UFC Qatar has a fun fight added in the welterweight division as Mike Tebek Orobai is back. So excited to see Mike Tebek back. He beat Tofik Musiev pretty easily last time out when they were in, oh my goodness, where were they at? It was, where was the last weird UFC event? It was where Jamal Hill, Baku, UFC Baku in Azerbaijan. That's where he picked up the win over Tofik Musiev. He takes on Jack the Joker Hermanson. I kid you not, guys, I'm saying that correctly. Jack Hermanson, who was a decently sized middleweight, is moving down to welterweight. I have no idea if he's going to actually make the weight cut. But hey, we'll see. It would be his 19th fight in the UFC. I know he's been dealing with some cancellations as of late. I don't know if it's been his fault or not his fault. But yeah, Jack Hermanson getting himself a fight at welterweight. I'll be curious to see how that plays out. I'm riding with Mike Tebek either way, but imagine if Jack Hermanson drops down to welterweight, it is actually like an animal, because size-wise, he'd be decently bigger size than most guys in the division. I'm a little surprised at that, but we'll have to see. Those are all your new UFC fights, guys. A lot of exciting stuff. And, you know, this is usually the time of year where things start to get slow, and especially as we go week by week, you're only going to see 2 fight announcements, 3 fight announcements, and even as we get towards the end of the year, we're not even going to know what January is. So we'll just take these fights with a grain of salt as we can, but yeah, good fights added so far, and we're going to be getting more fighters coming into the UFC as well as Dana White's Contender Series 9.8. Like I said earlier, I just can't believe we're already on episode 8. Of Dana White's Contender Series. We got 5 new fights to talk about with you guys, and these ones are pretty even. These ones should be close, and maybe we'll have 5 new contracts headed out. You know, let's check it out and drop our predictions for each of these fights. Our Dana White's Contender Series card begins in the men's flyweight division, and we legit have a Russian Khabib. We have a Khabib at flyweight. We have a Russian flyweight here that is definitely going to be a problem, I think, if he can especially get past his opponent here. Rashid Rambovagabov. Vagabov is such a tough last name, I do have to say. Taking on Paulo P.H. Henrique. Rashid is 13-2. Paulo is 12-1. Both men are 5'7". A 6-inch reach advantage for Paulo Henrique at a 69 to 63 inches is probably one of the biggest discrepancies here. Other than that, I mean, Paulo is also my age. Like, I'm not 23 yet, but I'm about to be. He was born in 2002, which is my birth year. I always love to see it. Orthodox stance for Rashid, and Paulo's is not listed. Thank you, UFC stats. Now we don't know how Paulo stands. But yeah, Rashid Vagabov is a minus 550 favorite here, which is just nuts. If you ask me, he's 27 years old from Mahashala, Russia, on a 5-fight win streak. And yes, he does train at the same area as Khabib. Abdul Nurmagomedov was one of his head coaches before he passed. Out of his victories, 4 KOs and 4 subs. Not too bad. Not too bad. 8 of 13 wins, especially as a Russian. You know, you never know. And he's only ever been submitted once out of his 2 defeats. His last win was in February. And since coming over to UAE, that is the United Arab Emirates Warriors, of course, is one of the promotions out there. He's gone 3-0. done pretty good. His last four wins have all came by sub. So this man, I think, just unlocked submissions. I think if we're looking at him as a UFC 5 creative player, he just unlocked submissions. So Rashid Vagvov, excited to see how he does as he takes on the plus 400 underdog, Paulo Henrique. 23 years old, as I mentioned, from Sao Paulo, Brazil. He's on an 11-fight win streak. That is right. My boy Paulo lost his first second professional fight and started 1-1 and then decided, I'm not losing again. He has 9 subs, so the game plan is pretty simple for him, and his one defeat was by TKO. Or one of his 2 defeats. Does he have 1 or 2? He's 12-1. 12-1. I already forgot his record. Maybe that's why I'm not picking him, because he's so unforgettable. Or he's too forgettable. He's not unforgettable. He's too forgettable. His last win came in May, and it was actually in the LFA. So good for him. And he actually trains at Charles Oliveira Gold Team, which I guess is Charles Oliveira's gym, but it's not the gym he trains at. I have no idea how it works, but it's basically Charles Oliveira versus Khabib. We're finally getting it here. No, I'm going with Rashid Vagvov, V-A-G-A-B-O-V. I just like his odds, man. You know what? He's fought in some tough competition. He's fought in a tough league at the UAE Warriors, and he's been on a tear. Getting submission, so I'm going to go with Rashid Vagvov, and we could use an exciting flyweight to make a run through the division. We've been seeing too many guys getting caught with gatekeepers, such as Loner Kavanaugh with Charles Johnson in general, just to train everyone. Joshua Van was such a breath of fresh air into the division, so we'll see if Rashid Vagvov can make the same impact as he comes into the UFC, but yeah. Let's see if he gets past Paulo Henrique. Next up, we got a fun matchup coming in second on the card. Featherweight division, as you have Curtis the Pink Panther Campbell taking on Demba Black Tiger Sek. Ooh, that's some cool name. I like Black Tiger as a nickname. Curtis is 7-0. Demba is 10-2. 6'1" to 5'9". Height goes to Demba Sek here. 2 inches in reach as well for him, which isn't too much. Orthodox stance for the Black Tiger and switch stance for the Pink Panther. So you're either going to go with a Black Tiger taking on a Pink Panther, and we're going to see who's more dominant. Curtis coming in, minus 450 favorite. Crazy. Demba is plus 320. Curtis, 23 years old, is from England. He trains at Liverpool something. It's like the Great Liverpool train thing. I checked out the gym. There's no one notable from there. 4 KOs and 1 sub give him 5 of his 7 wins by finish, which is pretty good. His last win came in March, and I looked at his 7 opponents, and they've all had a pretty good record. The only opponent he fought with a negative record was his debuting professional fight, and that's because he was 0-1. So Curtis could be the next big star from England. I will say the age, him being 23, and Demba, who we're going to talk about here, being 31, is a bit tricky. And as for Demba, we can just talk about him real quick. Plus 320. He's 31 years old. He's from Senegal. So, fights off Senegal. 7-fight winning streak for him. Of his 10 wins, 4 KOs and 4 subs. Never been finished. Of his 2 defeats, 1's a unanimous decision, 1's a split decision. His last win came in July, and he's 3-0 in 2025, which I love to see. His opponent's records have been average. You know, nothing like too crazy. I mean, they're honestly fought in the same level of guys, if you're asking me. And this one's really tricky for me, because Curtis is coming in minus 450 favorite. Clearly has some hype behind him. I don't know, something about Demba Sek. Demba Sek just has such a cool name. I would love to see him in the UFC. He's been on a tear as well. And I love guys that stay active. We're talking about DC's friend. Oh my gosh, he went on one of the earlier episodes, and this was like his 8th fight in the last calendar year, so I always love to see that. And it's the Contender Series. You gotta pick underdogs, and you know what? I'm gonna go with Demba Sek. Gonna pick the underdog here. Gonna ride with the underdog. Mind you, I don't keep track of these. I know I've gone 5-0 on some, 3-2, 4-1. But yeah, I just like Demba Sek's name. I like that he's from Senegal, and I want to see new guys from different countries break in, because I would love to see UFC Africa one day. I really would love to see that. We had an opportunity when we had 3 champions that had heritage from there. But now we got guys fighting out of Senegal, so could be another opportunity. But yeah, Curtis Campbell is such like an easy comp out pick. And if I'm going with Rashid Vagvov, I got to mix it up with Demba Sek. Moving on to the 3rd fight on episode 8 of Dana White's Contender Series. We head to the men's welterweight division as Elizir Kubanza takes on Christopher the Newborn Alvarez. Elizir 7-0. Christopher 6-1. 6'5", 9", bit of height for Christopher. Both men 74 inch reach and both stand in the orthodox fighting position. Christopher +210. Elizondeir -275. So odds going towards the undefeated guy here in Elizondeir Kubanza. But we'll start with the underdog, Christopher Alvarez, 28 years old from California, currently riding a 5-fight winning streak. Trains out of the Goat Chip. Same gym as Jillian Robertson, Hector Lombard, normal name, and Ramiro Jimenez. And Ramiro Jimenez actually won on, it was either episode 2 or 3 of this season. So he's coming in with a teammate that's already gotten into the UFC. 4 KOs and 1 sub, give him 5 of his 7 wins by victory, or 5 of his 6 wins, my bad. And his last fight was in April, where he TKO'd Takashi Sato, which is a decent name to finish. If I beat us, Takashi Sato has been in the UFC before. Now, did he have any success? No. Gunnar Nelson beat him. Brian Battle beat him. So might have just gotten the scraps of him, but yeah, Christopher coming in, good for him, underdog, but pretty even. Elizondeir Kubanza, his opponent, -275 favorite. Good odds, really good odds. 27 years old from the Dominican Republic of the, it's the Democratic Republic of Congo. I was thinking, was it the Dominican Republic? No, it's the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He's riding a 7-fight win streak. Coming in 7-0, that is. And he was 7-0 as an amateur. Like, this dude has not lost in a while. Trains out of Soma Fight Club. Same gym as Pooja Tamar and Anshul Jubilee, who didn't have much success in the UFC as Indian fighters. But, I mean, it's still two people that fought in the UFC, so we can shout them out. 6 of his 7 wins are by KO, and his last fight was December 13th, 2024. I really like Christopher Alvarez here, but there's just something about Elizondeir Kubanza, which is drawing me in. And I know he's shorter, but I really love to reference the one fight we had 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to think with who it was. Oh my gosh, I don't even know if I can think of their name. Let me see if I have it in my notes. It was Emo Barawanski versus Muhammad Ali. Actually, his name is Muhammad Ali, but that's funny. It looks like Muhammad Ali. But yeah, Iwo came in and was definitely at a significant height disadvantage, and he just had the knockout power. Clipped him with one shot, and he was out. So I don't really think that's too much to go against. I would love to see someone from the Democratic Republic break into the UFC. Elizondeir Kubanza, I'm going to ride with you, and I'm going to ride with him to get a round one knockout. Now, let's get into a fun matchup here. We're heading to the men's bantamweight division, and Luis the Mad Prince Jourdain takes on Magno the Violent Diaz. This is my favorite fight I've been looking forward to on this card, and it is because Luis Jourdain is the younger brother of Charles Jourdain. That is right. And Magno the Violence Diaz, he trains out of the Fighting Nerd. So I absolutely love this. It's Gene Silva versus Charles Jourdain 2.0 taking place at bantamweight. Odds makers, Luis Jourdain -165, Magno Diaz +135. Odds makers have this pretty close. 8-3 for Luis, 6-1 for Magno, 5'9" to 5'5". I will say Magno is a very short bantamweight at 5'5", 2 inches in reach as well. Go to Luis Jourdain, 69-67. Orthodox stands for both men. Yeah, Luis has some height and size. Luis is 20 years old from Quebec. The younger brother of Charles is on a 3-fight win streak, and out of his 8 wins, he has 5 finishes, 4 KOs and 1 sub. Of his 3 defeats, he has been subbed twice. I do want to point out his last win did come in May. So yeah, we have a younger brother fighting on here. Would it be cool to get them in the company at the same time? That would be super dope, and we could put them both on a UFC Canada card, put them both in Quebec. That'd be great. But I can't lie, despite Magno Diaz being the +135 underdog, I really like his odds here. He's 28 years as old as well, from Brazil, trains out of the Fighting Nerds. Of course, if you don't know if you've made it this far into the podcast and don't know who the Fighting Nerds are, then you're probably a bit lost on everything I'm talking about. But he has 2 KOs and 4 subs, giving him a 100% finish rate, and his 1 defeat was by sub. This man has never been the distance. Currently rides a 3-fight win streak. His last win was in April, or fight, I should just add in there. Yeah, I think this is super even. I'm really going to be curious to see how Luis looks when he gets in the cage, but I mean, I'm not going against someone from the Fighting Nerds. I'm just not. I'm going with Magno Diaz here as another underdog prediction. The Contender Series is such a perfect spot to pick underdogs because it's genuinely just two. They're not amateurs, but they are just two people who you'd have no idea if they're UFC level. They've been coming from different paths. I mean, if we go through the card, Rashid Vagabov, fighting guys in the UAE, fighting Russian guys. Paulo Henrique, fighting Brazilians. All right, coming out over from the LFA. We go to Curtis Campbell. He's having fights in London. We then go to Dembasek. He's fighting guys out of some random African league. Elizondeir Kubanza, he's fighting guys from that African region. And then you have Christopher Alvarez, who's picking up wins in the American scene. So you never really know what type of experience guys are bringing in. But I really like the Fighting Nerds gym. I do really love that Magno Diaz has never been the distance. I think when you bring that intensity in, you can really get a quick finish. But hey, maybe Luis Jourdain is super talented and I'll have to eat my words. I'm just looking forward to this fight. It is my fight of the night currently on my predictions. And with that, we head into the final matchup, the main event, if you want to call it that. Middleweight division. Kind of some smaller weights on this card. You know, I mean, middleweight's the biggest weight division here as Vitor Costa takes on Damien the Baba Yaga Penez. Yeah, that traps gain. That'll do it. That'll do it. Baba Yaga is his nickname. You gotta be kidding me. That's literally the nickname they gave John Wick. Vitor Costa 8-1. Damien Penez 7-1. 6-2 to 6-1 one tonight for Vitor and 4 inches reach. Go to Damien Penez. So a little height one side, a little reach one side. They both fight in the orthodox stance, and they are both some young, hungry 20-year-olds looking to get it done, and I'm here for it. And am I here for it? Vitor Costa, the 8-1 plus 105 underdog, is 25 years old, fighting out of Brazil. Currently rides an 8-fight winning streak after dropping his first ever loss. And by the way, he got knocked out by Cesar Almeida in his debut. We know how good Cesar Almeida is. He had an excellent KO earlier this year in January, which earlier this year is a long time ago when we look at it like that. 3 KOs and 3 subs give him 6 of his 8 wins by a finish. He was actually supposed to fight Ryan Gondra August 20th. I remember this. He had to pull out, but luckily they were able to get him later on in the year. His last fight, September 28th, 2024. So it's been a while since Vitor has fought, but I do want to say his last 5 wins have all came in round number 1, and they've all came in this 3-minute to 4-minute range. Like, you, I saw a lot around the 3-minute and like 15 seconds, 16, 17 seconds. He also had a couple in the 338, 348, so very interesting that that appears to be the golden time for Vitor Costa to get a finish. Now, will he get it done? I don't know, as he takes on a very tough competitor, the minus 125 favorite, Damien the Baba Yaga Penez. 23 years old from Suriname, but now trains out of, or I guess fights out of Aruba. He actually trains out of a Brazilian gym, Novia Unio, same gym as Jose Aldo, Hen Brau, some other fighters you'd recognize. 6 KOs and 1 sub give him a 100% finish rate, and of his 7 wins, 5 have came in round number 1. Currently riding a 3-fight winning streak. He was supposed to fight on the first episode of the season, and unfortunately that never materialized. His opponent pulled out, I'm pretty sure. His last fight, December 2024. So it's been a while. Been a while since he's fought, and both these guys haven't fought since the end of 2024. This one's super close. This actually might be fight of the night. I actually think this is why they put this fight going last. But Vitor has been on absolute tears, only losses to a high-level guy. He already had a fight booked. Same goes for Damien Penez. I don't know. In my pre-fight notes, I always underline who I think is going to win. And I actually changed my Demba Sek Curtis Campbell prediction from that. And I underlined Vitor Costa here, but Damien Penez is super appetizing. I don't know, guys. I really don't. Vitor Costa, as an underdog, I would really get behind. If you wanted to go and ride with him and support him, that would be a good call. But yeah, I'm something's telling me Vitor Costa might get this done. Vitor Costa just kind of has that name, which kind of is synonymous with guys you can just hear fighting in the UFC. So I'm going to go with Vitor Costa, but this one's really 50-50. I'm really torn on this one. It's actually the most torn fight I have on the whole card, but it should be good. It should be good. I sense good things out of this Vitor Costa-Damien Penez fight. Yeah, this should be a good episode. The more that I look at this top to bottom, these fights, the odds makers, it's tough to say. You know, that's why I mentioned, like, you can't judge the odds. You really can't. Like, we got minus 550 and plus 400. The plus 400 can win easy as day, and then you have a minus 125 against plus 105, and the minus 125 could starch the plus 105. So we'll just have to see. But yeah, Dan White's Contender Series 9.8. Let me know who you guys are riding with. We'll, of course, be recapping on the next episode, and then we're going to go long season without any more new fights. So treasure the few that we have left. I believe we have, including these, 15 more fights, unless they sneak on a 6. Sometimes they usually do on the final few episodes. But yeah, good fights all around. And Rashid Vagabov is my lock of the night, especially being that he fights out of the Khabib camp. So with that, let's do our recap of week 4 of the NFL season. My fantasy teams are all up in air. I hope I at least win in one of my 6 leagues, for goodness sakes. But right now, Dolphins are taking on the Jets, heading into the second quarter, currently 3-0 to the Dolphins. And I believe I picked the Dolphins to win this game. I can't recall. You also have the Bengals and Broncos going down tonight. I'm going to need some big performances from Ja'Marr Chase in that contest. But let's go through all the matchups, talk about what happened, talk about the top fantasy performances. And yeah, a lot of interesting stuff happened this week, including the game of the year so far, ending in a tie. What? Yeah, it was a crazy week, guys. And, you know, it all started on Thursday Night Football. And I actually watched it with my buddy Jane, which was super fun. I was watching at a bar with another one of our buddies, Chase. And Seahawks got it done, 23-20 against the Cardinals. It was looking like a blowout for the Seahawks. And the Cardinals rallied in the final, I kid you not, 5 minutes. I mean, you saw two touchdowns from them. And then, unfortunately, comeback was stuffed short. I was really hoping it was going to be an OT game. But Jason Myers seals the deal with a 52-yarder. Seahawks win 23-20. Sam Darnold, 16 fantasy points. Jason Myers, 13. And Jackson Smith and Jigba, 13. Not much going on there. Best fantasy performer for the game, Marvin Harrison Jr., 18.6. Kyler Murray also had 16, and Trey McBride had 12. Sam Darnold, 242 yards and a tutty. Decent stat line. Kenneth Walker ran in a touchdown. Actually, Kenneth Walker didn't run in a touchdown. They gave it to Zach Charbonnet, who ran it in. Oddly enough, Jackson Smith and Jigba had 3 rushes for 11 yards. Kind of odd. 4 catches, 79 yards for him. He was also the top wide receiver, but it was the tight end Barner. I can't remember what his name is. AJ Barner. Yeah, he caught the only touchdown. So overall, it was only Marvin Harrison Jr. popping off. He had 6 catches for 68 yards and the tutty. Murray, 200 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 brutal picks. Yeah, Kyler Murray was throwing picks left, right, and center, which didn't help them whatsoever. Seahawks, good stuff. I actually don't have the all-time standings pulled up here when these two face each other. I always feel that the Seahawks get the better of the Cardinals. I just feel like that's always taking place. But yeah, Seahawks get it done. It was actually an entertaining Thursday football game in the second half, or even the ending of it. Seahawks improved to 3-1. Cardinals fall to 2-2. Seahawks, after losing the opener, are on a 3-game winning streak. They have 111 points for, 67 points against. Look out, Sam Darnold looking pretty nasty. With that, we moved on. Then we got into Sunday, and we opened up our mornings with a little Dublin football going down in Ireland, and my Minnesota Vikings loss to the Steelers, 24-21. And I had Jordan Addison on my bench, and I lost because I didn't start him. It makes me sad. It really does make me sad, but it is what it is. Justin Jefferson was the best player for the Vikings, 22.6 fantasy points. Carson Wentz had 21.2, and the backup running back, Xavier Scott, had himself a 16.4 fantasy performance. Very, very surprising there. This game looked about all but over. I mean, the Vikings were just getting blown out, and then 7 minutes left, they score 2 touchdowns, and then when they have a final chance to win the game, I think Carson Wentz threw like 2 picks. I mean, he had 2 picks the whole game. 350 yards from Wentz. He was looking pretty good. 2 tutties, was slinging it. Jordan Mason, 57 yards running. Didn't really do much there. JJ had 10 catches for 126 yards. Addison, 4 catches, 114 yards. Hawk had himself 4 catches. And Jalen Naylor, 1 catch, 1 touchdown. Good for him. As for the Steelers, Kenneth Gainwell, you know, Jalen wore it out. Kenneth Gainwell steps in, 31.4 fantasy points, cooked the Vikings. DK Metcalf had 23.6. He just started off the game with a massive 80-yard tutty, which was wild. And from there, just didn't really get better. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, 18 for 22, 200 yards, 1 touchdown, kind of just methodically cooked the Vikings defense, which was sad to see. Gainwell, 19 rushes, 99 yards, 2 touchdowns. Great work. DK, 5 catches, 126 yards, and a tutty. Did what he had to do. I mean, yeah, sucks for the Vikings. It really does. But on the plus side, you know, we're 2-2. Lions are 3-1. Bears are 2-2. Packers are 2-1-1. So still pretty even overall, but nonetheless, losing isn't enjoyable. And for the Steelers, they're 3-1. Top of the AFC North. Unless the Bengals win, then they'll be tied with them. Following that, we got into our noon slate, kicking us off, upset. Giants over the Chargers. Did not see this one coming. Did not have this on my bingo card whatsoever. But yeah, Giants pick up their first win of the year. Good for them. Jackson Dart, 19.84 fantasy points, is nasty. All right, Jackson Dart is nasty, and Russell Wilson, you are not seeing the field whatsoever again. You are done. Cam Scadabo, 13 fantasy points as well. He was able to get himself a touchdown, I think it was. Or maybe it wasn't. Extra point. I think Cam Scabo had an extra point run is what it was. But yeah, good stuff from Jackson Dart. 111 yards and a tutty. Also ran for 54 yards and a tutty. I mean, my boy is cracking Ole Miss chicks, and now he's out here cracking defenses in the NFL. Good for him. But other than that, Malik Nabers getting injured was a huge L for anyone that drafted him. I didn't. so I wasn't too unhappy. But I do want to point out that Cam Scattable had 25 rushing attempts and got 79 yards. That boy is just a little mini tank and just goes. He reminds me of the Brad guy. You guys know the Brad guy on the internet? He does like the wake up super early in the morning, kick the sheets guy. That's who he reminds me of. They feel like they have similar energies. Now, on the opposite side for the Chargers, Omari Hampton, 27.5 fantasy points. Breakout game for the rookie. I mean, this was a breakout day for rookies all around. Quentin Johnson, 23.8 fantasy points, also had himself a good day despite the unfortunate loss overall. And, you know, Herbert, 203 yards at a tutty, did throw two crucial picks, which really hurt them. Amari, 128 yards rushing, one touchdown, five catches, 37 yards. And then for Quentin Johnson, eight catches, 98 yards, and a tutty. You know, happens. Happens is all I can say. But yeah, Chargers, somehow, rough start to the season here. 3-1, I guess it's not that rough start. Oh, I was thinking of the Giants. They start off 1-3, but I guess momentum's looking up for them. And for the Chargers, momentum may be looking down. But yeah, I think the Chargers are still going to be good overall. Just still a little shocked that they dropped this one to the Giants of all teams. Now, one matchup I wasn't surprised about, that's the Texans beating the Titans. I mean, holy cow, do the Titans suck? Like, I knew the Titans sucked, but actually, like, checking in with this game, they're bad. They're bad. They have the least points for on the year, and they have the most points against them. 51 points for on the year, 120 points against. Are they the only 0-4 team? No, there's going to be another 0-4 team. Oh, them and the Saints are both 0-4, but this is easily the worst team in the NFL. I mean, just ridiculous. Tony Pollard, 10 fantasy points. That's it. That's it. That's all you had to show for this Titans team. Cam Ward, 108 yards and a pick. Tony Pollard, 64 yards on the ground. Oh, Cam Ward ran for 22 yards. And Ayon Amarnar, the rookie wide receiver, had 44 yards on two catches. But, I mean, Cam Hayward only completed 10 catches. Now, I do want to say is that Cam Ward is being put into an awful system. Like, the Titans are just gosh awful. So, I don't want to be too critical of him. So, I don't know. We'll just leave it be at that. Now, as for the Texans, Woody Marks, 27.9 fantasy points. Breakout day for the new Texans starting running back, easily. CJ Stroud, 18 fantasy points. Best on the year. You know, was much needed. 233 yards on only six incompletions. Had two tutties. Woody Marks, 69 yards. One touchdown on the ground. Four catches, 50 yards, and a touchdown through the air. You also had Higgins getting a touchdown. You also had Dalton Schultz getting five catches for 30 yards. Nico Collins, four catches, 79 yards. Everyone was spreading the love as the Texans pick up the victory. A much needed win for this Texans team, their first win of the year. They'll move to 1-3, and the Titans will fall again to 0-4. Very embarrassing, very pitiful, and yeah, there's just not much more to say in regards to this game. Now, a game that was, you know, surprising all around. Commanders lose to the Falcons 34-27, high scoring game. Very high scoring, which is always entertaining to see. Falcons improved to 2-2. Commanders fall to 2-2. Interesting. One team's moving up 2-2. One team's falling down to 2-2. Debo, 20.1 fantasy points. It's just, you know, watching Debo be the best player by a margin on his team is always interesting to see. Matt Gay, 18 fantasy points, was the star of this game. Mariota had 16. And for the Falcons, Bijan, 28. Drake London, breakout game of the year with 25. And Michael Penix, 18.72. Good stuff. Really good stuff. But, I mean, just a cooking. Just a cooking from the Falcons here. Let's go over the Commanders real quick because they just had a rough day. 156 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Just kind of fell behind Jay Kroski-Merritt and Chris Rodriguez Jr. We're just kind of splitting the workload and just not really doing much. Debo, six catches, 72 yards at tutty. Easily the start of the game. Other than that, Luke McCaffrey caught a tutty. You know, it's not much else to really go over. Penix, six incompletions, 313 yards, two tutties. Did throw a pick, but looked good overall. Bijan, 75 yards, one touchdown. Ty Allgeier, 16 rushes, 51 yards at a touchdown. Bijan, 17, I forgot to mention that. Those two split carries for this game, very interesting to see. But you know where Bijan cooks? Four catches, 106 yards. That's where the fantasy points come from. Kyle Pitts, five catches, 70 yards, got a tutty. Drake London, eight catches, 110 yards at a tutty. Wow. Wow, excellent game from him. Darnell Mooney had one catch. And Ray-Ray McCloud III had one catch for negative 7 yards. Very interesting. So, Falcons, are they good? Are they bad? I don't think anyone genuinely knows. What I do know is that without Jaden Daniels, this Commanders team just looks a tinge lost. Now, another team that easily looks lost is the Saints here. They are the second worst team in the league. They're 0-4. Oh my goodness, and just look abysmal. Now, they did put them 19 on the Bills, and the Bills are 4-0. They are one of the best teams in the league. They are one of only two undefeated teams still, and they're cooking everyone they play. But, you know, Saints did hang in there. It was 14-7 hanging into the second quarter, and hanging into half, it was 14-10. Then, of course, things got a bit out of control to end the game with a 10-0 run in the final 7 minutes. But fantasy-wise, Spencer Rattler, 13, Kendra Miller, 12, and Alvin Kamara, 11. Nothing going on in Fantasyland. Funny enough, Chris Olave threw a pick. Chris Olave threw a freaking pick. You believe that? They ran a trick play in the end zone, and Chris Olave clearly doesn't know how to throw the ball. For the Bills, Josh Allen, 24.86. Yeah, that boy nasty. That boy nasty. James Cook, 22. Khalil Shakir, 17.9. This team is just amazing. Spencer, 126 yards and a touchdown. Honestly, he didn't look that bad, if I'm being honest. Kendra Miller stole the touchdown from Kamara at the goal line. Rashid Shaheed led the day with 4 catches, 47 yards. Chris Olave, 3 catches, 21 yards. Got a tutty to redeem himself, but throwing that pick, costly. Honestly, if he didn't throw that pick, the Saints really might have made this a close game. And by the way, Josh Allen, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, threw a pick. For goodness sakes. Now, did run 45 yards tutty. James Cook did run 170 yards at tutty. Couldn't stop him there. And Shakir was the star wide receiver of this game. I always feel like the Bills are rotating who their star wide receiver is. But this game, it was Khalil Shakir. I guess Keon Coleman was good for week one. It's like, you know what, fantasy owners, I'm good to give you mediocre fantasy performances from a year on out. After that, oddly enough, the second undefeated team in the league also put up 31 points, but they had a much closer game as the Eagles survived the Buccaneers. I do have a bone to pick. Jalen Hurts. This is insane stat. The Eagles, I don't know if it's, I know for a fact they didn't complete a pass in the second half, but I always feel like they didn't attempt one was the actual statistic. This was ridiculous. This was utterly ridiculous. Now, in the second half, this was where the Buccaneers exploded, because heading into halftime, I thought this game was wraps. You know, I thought this game was over. It was 24-6. I'm like, this could be a blowout. And then no, the entire team just rallies to end the game, and you know, what was a little too late. But Bucky Irvin, 25 fantasy points. Emeka Egbuka, currently my rookie of the year with 20.1, and Baker at 18.86. So good fantasy day overall. Dallas Goedert, 19. Jalen Hurts, 19. Saquon, 17. Pretty average day from the gang. But yeah, you know, Jalen Hurts is a excellent QB, but he just doesn't really put in, like, crazy passing performances. 130 yards, 2 touchdowns is good. He also ran for 62 yards. Super impressive. And, you know, Saquon, too, actually. 43 yards a tutty, looking good. It was sadly Dallas Goedert stealing all the catches from Devontae Smith. Devontae only had 2 catches for 29 yards. He sold for me. For the Bucks, Baker had himself a good day. 289 yards, 2 touchdowns to throw a pick. That kind of sucks. And Amika, 4 catches, 101 yards, and he had a 70, or no, Bucky had the 70, actually, no, there were 2 70-yard touchdowns in the third quarter. Amika, 77-yard from Baker, and a 72-yarder from Bucky Irving. Wow, good stuff. But too little, too late, the Eagles defense just knew what to do, or the offense, whatever, because they, like, took a safety, then the game just, yeah, too little, too late. They're 4-0, second-best team in the league. I do have them behind the Bills. However, you know, I could see the Eagles being better than the Bills. As for the Bucks, they're 3-1. First loss of the season, not too bad, and I definitely do think they are the best team in the NFC South. Moving on, Lions manhandle the Browns, yeah. Just domination, not much more to say. Lions are best team in the NFC North. Oh, what a shocker. Tied for second best team in the league right now, as there are a lot of 3-1 teams. And the Browns, they suck. The Browns do suck. The game started off, and I actually thought the Browns were going to make this close. They start off the game with a touchdown in the first 5 minutes, and I'm like, okay. Okay, Browns go off. And then they didn't do anything the rest of the game. Krishan Judkins, 21.5 fantasy points. He's a stud. Other than that, no, everyone else sucks. Like, the whole team is just awful. Just awful. They're 1-3, worst team in the AFC North. Is it crazy that them and the Ravens have the same record, yet the Ravens have 131 points for, and the Browns have 56 points for? I mean, that's insane. They have almost triple. They might actually almost have triple if they get 20-piece the next game. For the Lions, Amon-Ra, 26 fantasy points. The Detroit D, 20. And Jahmyr Gibbs had 17. Just an obliteration. Oh, any which way you look at it. I mean, the game was all but wrapped up, and then 2 touchdowns were scored by the Lions to end the game. Joe Flacco, 184 yards and 2 picks. Didn't have it going. Krishan Judkins, 82 yards rushing, 1 tutty. Also had 4 catches for 33 yards. It's just the Krishan Judkins show. Easily the best pickup for the Browns in this past offseason. Jared Goff, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns, a pick. Didn't even have a good game. If I'm being honest, he didn't really go that off, if you ask me. Now, one thing I'm noticing is, how did the Detroit D get 20 fantasy points? Oh, I guess they had a punt return. That helped with it. I was trying to say, how did they do that? Gibbs, 91 yards and a touchdown, took over the backfield from David Montgomery. Amon-Ra, 7 catches, 7 yards, 2 tutties, was a stud. Yeah, Lions are good. We know. Vikings are mediocre. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, well. Moving on. You had a high-scoring one from the Patriots here. 42-13, dominating the Panthers. Tremble, 15 fantasy points, was the only star for the Panthers. That's it. 15 fantasy points from Tommy Tremble, or whatever his name is. As for the Pats, Drake May, 23.32 fantasy points. He's like the number 4 fantasy QB. Drake May is nasty. Stephon Diggs, 16 fantasy points. Had a breakout game. Travion Henderson, 12.6. You know, he, you know, did pretty decent himself. I'll give him that. You know, he had a good game. Hunter Henry caught a 31-yard touchdown. Matt Collins got a touchdown. Antonio Gibson ran in a touchdown. So Travion and even Drake May ran a touchdown. And you had Marcus Jones returning a punt. I mean, this team was firing on all cylinders. Similar to that Browns game. You open up the game in 5 minutes. The Panthers scoring after that, they just forgot how to play football. And what do you know it? Bryce Young benched again. Second season in a row. And Andy Dalton actually came in and threw a touchdown. I just realized they went for two. That's what happened there. Chubb Hubbard, 49 yards. Didn't do anything. Torrey McMillan, 4 catches, 60 yards. Pretty mediocre. Yeah. Yeah, just a rough performance all around for the Panthers. I'm sure to no one's surprise, this team is the worst team in their division. Actually, I forgot. They have the Saints in their division. The Buccaneers and Falcons continue to run the NFC South. As for the Pats, second in the AFC East. They have a 2-game advantage over the Jets and Dolphins, and they are unfortunately 2 games behind the Bills, but I do see potential in their future. Drake May, 203 yards and 2 touchdowns. Good work. Stephon Diggs, 6 catches, 101 yards. That's how you do it. Good stuff for the Pats. I know a Patriots fan. I'm sure he is very happy. One of the bigger upsets of this week, the Jaguars beat the 49ers 26-21. What is going on? What is going on? Travis Etienne, 19.5 fantasy points, cooked. Jacksonville D had 14. Good work. Christian McCaffrey, 26.1. Too little, too late. Yeah. Christian McCaffrey, always good to be an absolute stud. Unfortunately, just the defense didn't have it going for the 49ers. T-Law, 174 yards and a pick. A touchdown. Just didn't really look that good. I'm saying, you know, I drafted Tank Bigsby before Travis Etienne. Travis Etienne's stat line for the game, 124 yards and touchdown. Still will never get over it. Still will never get over that I thought Tank Bigsby was going to be the starter in Jacksonville, and I was clearly mistaken. Travis Etienne literally had a down year last year. I'll never forget myself. B-Tom, 5 catches, 49 yards. Still waiting for him to break out. Even though I don't have him in a league, I still love him as a person. Purdy, 309 yards, 2 touchdowns, but 2 picks. That'll hurt you. McCaffrey, 6 catches, 92 yards, and touchdown. Rush for 49 yards. He's an absolute killer. He really is. Ricky Purcell, 4 catches, 46 yards. Other than that, they really need Kittle back, really need Ayuk, and they just lost Nick Bosa. So 49ers ain't going to be on the downturn for this year. Next game, Rams and Colts. And one of the biggest missteps I've ever seen came from Adonai Mitchell, who had the game all but tied up and dropped the ball before the end zone. I mean, you can't make it up. In the NFL in the year 2025, we got people dropping the ball before the end zone. Tyler Warren, rookie tight end, 18.3 fantasy points. He's looking like he's going to be this year's Sam Laporta and Brock Bowers, and I discovered both of them, and for some reason, I thought it was going to be Loveland for the Bears. Wow, I missed on that. Pittman, 15. Jonathan Taylor, 14.6. So kind of an off day for them. Puka Nacua, best fantasy player this week, 36 fantasy points. Matthew Stafford, 27.4. And Tutu Atwell put in a little 15.8 game. He got an 88-yarder to end the game. That's right. That's where all his fantasy points came from. If you want to know how Tutu Atwell get all those points, yeah, Tutu Atwell was good for a 1 catch for 88 yards. That's actually awesome. That 1 yard, 88 yard catch. He was better than both my starters combined. Oh, Devontae Smith to DJ Moore, what is wrong with both of you? Matt Stafford, 375 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's an insanely good stat line. Puka, 13 catches, 170 yards, a touchdown. That's wild. Devonta Adams nabbed himself a touchdown. Impressive all around. Daniel Jones, kind of an off game, threw 2 picks. Not going to get it done. And yeah, Rams escape with the victory. Good game, though. You know, it's always close when it's a 1-score game. But still, at the end of the day, Colts lose their first game of the season. Still the best team in the AFC South. They are ahead of the Jags, who are also 3-1. They're on a little 2-game winning streak now. And for the Rams, Rams will remain at third in the NFC West. There's 3 3-1 teams. The NFC West is nasty this year. Super impressive. We had another fantastic game here, Chiefs and Ravens, and it was so fantastic because my starting QB, Lamar Jackson, decided to tear his hamstring. Oh, it just pains me. I really hope Lamar is not actually injured. Chiefs blow out the Ravens 37-20, showing that there really is levels to this. There's levels to this. There really is. Chiefs, maybe 2-2, but they are a good 2-2, and they're on their way back to reclaim the AFC West. Ravens, like I said, fall to 1-3. Can you believe that? Truly believe this team is 1-3. Doesn't even feel like it. Patrick Mahomes, 27 fantasy points. Justice Hill, 27. 27 fantasy points for Justice freaking Hill. He had 3 rushes for 76 yards at Tutty and had 5 catches for 41 yards at Tutty. This dude just always goes off for like one big game and then we'll do nothing the rest of the year. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 74 yards, did pretty decent. Derrick Henry, 8 rushes, 42 yards. Is he washed? He might be washed. Lamar, pains me. Cooper Rush is their backup, too. Can't believe Cooper Rush is still in the league. Good for him. For Kansas City, 270 yards and 4 touchdowns for Mahomes is just wild. Just wild. Kareem Hunt, outpaced Isaiah Pacheco, 13 rushes to 7, but Pacheco had 35 yards to 34, so who's really the top guy here? Xavier Worthy, 5 catches, 83 yards. Travis Kelce, 5 catches, 48 yards. Hollywood Brown caught Tutty, which really messed me up. Yeah, yeah, the Chiefs, dominant as always. Just, you know, I'm so over the Chiefs. I hate them. I was really hoping the Ravens would have a good year. And now my star player, Lamar Jackson, may be out for the year. That would really, if he's actually out for the year, I may cry. I may shed a bunch of tears. And with that, we got into our final 3:30 game here. Bears and Raiders, you can't ask for a better game. And actually, it's some family members here, and you can't ask for a better game because Ashton Jeddy finally decided to go off. And of course, it's the week that my team absolutely sucks. But Bears escape with a game-winning kick, 25-24. Seal the deal, but it's all about Ashton Jeddy. That's all I care about. We could talk about Ashton Jeddy at a 9-yard touchdown pass. We're going to talk about Ashton Jeddy at an 8-yard touchdown pass. We're also going to talk about Ashton Jeddy at a 64-yard rush. This was the best performance I've ever seen from a running back ever in my life. Not actually, but I'm just gassing them up. 21 rushes, 138 yards, and a touchdown. 2 catches, 2 touchdowns, only 17 yards. Yeah, Ashton Jeddy was him. He was him. They should make the movie Him about Ashton Jeddy, which I still do have to see. Star player for the Bears, it's Cairo Santos, baby. It is Cairo Santos, a 51-yarder, a 52-yarder, a 43-yarder, a 46-yarder. And, oh, I remember that they threw a pick to end the game. Yeah, that's how they lost. Geno looked awful here. Geno throws 3 picks, 117 yards, 2 tutties. Wow, embarrassing. Really embarrassing. I was playing Brock Bowers, so kind of glad he did mediocre, 5 catches, 46 yards. But, yeah, DJ Moore, 4 catches, 38 yards. Not him. Romo Dunze is 4 catches, 69 yards at Tutty. Even at Cole Kmet and Omeyus Achuas getting more yards. I mean, what is going on here? Bears, better than the Vikings, I guess, when we look at it. Actually, the Vikings have beaten them. We got that going for us, but yeah, they're 2-2, bottom of the FC North, but FC North is pretty open right now. As for the Raiders, I really feel like they should be better than they are. They're 1-3, but I think they're better than the Broncos. I really do. They're on a 3-game losing streak, though, so they got to figure something out. They really do. But let's get into Sunday Night Football real quick, because game of the year so far. Easily game of the year. Seen a couple of good ones so far, but 40-40 tie. I think they said it was either the second or third highest tie in NFL history, and this game was awesome. This game was so entertaining to see. Now, it sucked having Brandon Aubrey only get 8 points and having Jake Ferguson get 17. That's what sealed the deal on Zach's defeat. But nonetheless, it was an exciting game. I mean, we start off the first quarter, just a 7-0 start for the Packers. Then, you know, another Romeo Doubs touchdown. Romeo Doubs having himself a fantastic day. 3 touchdown catches. Game starts out 14-0. Then, in the final 10 minutes, including 2 in the final 40 seconds, it goes 21-14 in the half. You get a Marquez Bell defensive PAT conversion. Okay. Then Dak Prescott runs a touchdown. Then George Pickens, after a fumble, you know, gets a touchdown right away. So fantastic work. Open the third quarter. Josh Jacobs ties it up. Then Jake Ferguson catches a touchdown. Then Josh Jacobs punches it in to start off the fourth. Then Javonte Williams punches it in. Like I said, Romeo Doubs catches the third touchdown. Then with 43 seconds left, George Pickens puts them ahead by 3. Brandon McManus, 53-yarder to tie the game. Then, starting off overtime, we don't have a score until the 4-minute, 40-second mark with Brandon Aubrey hitting a little chipper, 22-yarder. McManus, the Packers are scrambling. Packers had a chaotic final 5 minutes of the game, didn't know what to do. Eventually, McManus is able to nail it through to tie up the game, and yes, a 40-40 tie for Sunday Night Football. Kind of entertaining, if you ask me. Josh Jacobs, 31.7 fantasy points. Romeo Doubs, 29.8. And Jordan Love, 26.28. Studs. Pickens, 33.4. Dak, 30.96. And Javonte Williams, 19. Good stuff. Really good stuff overall for all these guys. Dobbs, only 58 yards and 6 catches for those 3 tutties. So he was an end zone magnet. Golden, whoever the rookie Golden is it Micah Golden, whatever? 5 catches, 58 yards, you know? He started the game off with like a 43-yarder. We're like, oh my gosh, he's going to go off, and nothing since then. But Jordan Love, 337 yards, 3 touchdowns. Josh Jacobs, 22 rushes, 2 touchdowns. Really good stat lines all around. For George Pickens, 8 catches, 134 yards, 2 touchdowns. Just an animal. Just an animal. And yeah, Jake Ferguson, 7 catches, 4 yards. Boo. Boo if you ask me. Dak, 319 yards, 3 touchdowns. Great work. So, with the tie here, 1-2-1 record.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
For the Cowboys, for the Packers, they'll be 2-1-1. We'll just wait to see what the future holds for both of these teams. But that's your Week 4 review. Best fantasy performance goes to Puka Nacua. You also get Ashton Gentry and George Pickens in there with some good fantasy performances. Josh Jacobs as well will throw in there. A lot of 30 bombs, but we still have Monday Night Football right now. And to give you guys a little live update where we're at, Dolphins are up 10-0. Miami defense has 14 fantasy points. Tyreek has 10. As we near halftime. And as for the Bengals-Broncos game, Bengals are up 3-0. T. Higgins currently has 4.5 fantasy points. So that's all you have. But, ladies and gentlemen, we're not done on this episode as we have to talk about UFC Perth, where I went 10-2 on predictions. I'm so nasty. I really am. I'm 253-135 on the year. I mean, come on, I'm good at making picks, man. I am really freaking good, you know, if you ask me. But yeah, a lot went down, a lot to talk about. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. One thing I'll say about UFC Perth to begin with is that there was a lot of consistency with this card. You know, we didn't have too many stretches with bad fights. And I think if anything with this card, a lot of fights that went the distance just didn't feel like they should be going the distance. Starting off the night, you had Alexa Thernera take on Loma Lukbumi, a matchup I was super torn on. Really torn on this one. Actually, real quick before we get into stuff, we lost some bangers here. Oban Elliott and Jonathan Mickleff fell apart after Oban Elliott couldn't make weight. That made no sense. And then Justin Taffa, who's a freaking heavyweight, came in 7 pounds heavy and had to be hospitalized. And we lost him and Louis Sutherland. So a card which originally was linked to 16 or 17 fights ended up only having 12, which was kind of an L. But nonetheless, Alexa Thanera taking on Loma Lukbumi to open up the night. And good win. Good win overall for Alexa Thanera. There is no complaints here. She beats the number 14 women pretty handsomely, or womanly, if we want to say. And she'll be ranked number 14 come the rankings update on Tuesday. 44 significant strikes to 30, 110 total strikes to 67, 5 of 11 on takedowns for 10 minutes of control time. She did go for an early sub and was unable to get it. And after that, just kind of worked on domination. But yeah, Alexa Thanera improves to 13-1. She's now 2-0 in the UFC. Actually, we also lost Michelle Montague and Louisiana. Oh, no, we didn't lose that fight. I'm trying to think of the bout order completely changed than when we recorded our video. It's all over the place now. I'm looking for my notes. But yeah, Alexa Thanera, 11-fight win streak now, dominant win. And I'm ready to see her in the rankings. I really am. Like we mentioned, Denise Gomez is taking on Tisha Pennington. Winner of that, I could also see, and I'd also love to maybe see her take on Jessica Andrade. I feel like her versus Jessica Andrade would also be a very interesting matchup. But yeah, overall, dominant win for Alexa Thanera. Kind of tough L for Loma Lukbumi, but yeah, I mean, it just happens. Alexa Thanera just had everything going for her, and the 4-fight win streak of Loma Lukbumi is snapped. I think she should just take on a young, up-and-coming woman strawweight. Jacqueline Amorim? Hello, Jacqueline Amorim. Do you want to take on a, you know, Loma Lukbumi? We'll have to see. But yeah, decent start to the night. I'm just surprised Alexa Thanera couldn't get her out of there. But then next up, Brando Peric and Alicia Ellison. Was it pretty? I don't know. Wasn't the prettiest thing, but Alicia Ellison just blindly shooting for takedowns in the men's heavyweight division. Not going to work as Brando Peric TKOs him, gets his 4th career knockout. All of them coming in round one. The winning streak's at 3. I love to see it. I really love to see it. Minute 55 seconds. Didn't even last long. Brandon Peric got on top and the bulky bear just started laying into him. I mean, Ellison was eating some shots on the chin. He went out cold. And that was that. Great work, Brando. Great work. Didn't even need the contender series, just coming in, getting a dominant win. I love to see it. Really happy. Really happy with the win that he got here. Now, in terms of what's next for him, we can already talk about what's next for him. I mean, if we could get him to do a quick turnaround against Louis Sutherland, I would love that. I also saw people throwing out the name Kenny Inchukwu. I saw people saying the winner of Sean Sheriff and Asplund, who we mentioned earlier that fight. A lot of options there. But I don't know if we're going to be able to get him to have a quick turnaround. He made it look easy. Got himself a performance bonus as well. And we're going to talk about someone who I can't believe didn't get a performance bonus. But great work for Brando Parrish here. Getting it done. As for Alicia Ellison, he falls to 5-2. Clearly not cut for the UFC. I saw people say he should be invited back. I didn't see it. Maybe he signed a multi-fight deal. But Brando Parrish was the favorite. Got it done. And started us off the night with our first finish. Now, here's where we go into the three-fight stretch, which if it had been four straight decisions, I would have said it was bad, but I didn't think so. First up, Michelle Montague and Luana Carolina, the fight I forgot about. Cannot believe that Michelle Montague did not get Luana Carolina out of there. Mind you, Luana Carolina, actually, Carolina had a good submission attempt in round one, then just didn't do anything from there, but this is insane. 5 of 7 on takedowns, 10 minutes, 43 seconds of control time, 99 total strikes, 75 in favor of Michelle Montague. Scorecards, 29-26, 30-25, and a 30-26. You have 10-8 in rounds 2 and 3 in favor of Michelle Montague. Just nothing going for Luana Carolina. If anything, you could have maybe given her round number 1, but even that, half of it was controlled by Michelle Montague. So Michelle Montague, first career fight where she goes the distance. She improves to 7-0. You love to see it here, but really surprised that she wasn't hunting more for submissions. You know, she had so much control time. She was really battering on Luana Carolina, and Luana Carolina just kind of refused to go away. For Carolina, three-fight win streak is snapped. Cast sucks to see, but women's bantamweights, we need more. We need more. Michelle Montague, you are tonight's big winner. You'll get a top 15 opponent. I mean, just like that, you can come in, you can pick up one big win, and you can get a top 15 opponent. So excited to see what Michelle Montague does. She's 7-0. I'd love to see her maybe against Misha Tate. You know, test her to that level. But if they want to have her go that high, Darya Zlynikova is always an option. And as for, you know, our girl here, Luana Carolina, I think a good opponent for her, a good bounce-back opponent. I just want to double-check. She hasn't fought in her yet. I think it would be Priscilla Cachoeira, who was recently knocked out by Jocelyn Edwards. I think that would be a good fight right there. So bounce-back fight for Luana Carolina against a fellow bounce-back fighter here. And Michelle Montague getting a ranked top 15 opponent. Would love to see it. But yeah, grappling performance, grappling her to death, and just couldn't get her out of there. A little bit surprising. Next up, bantamweight division. And when we talk about surprising, I have no idea how Josias Moussassa survived the round one submission from Koei Thickness. I mean, this dude had him in a bulldog choke. He rolls to the side, is just having his neck cranked on to end the round and just somehow gets out of it. Props to Josias Moussassa. And to be fair, fought back on the feet the last two rounds. You know, obviously round three got controlled the last 3 minutes, so lost it. But outstruck him 18-8 round two significantly, 13-11 round three significantly. So Josias Moussassa wouldn't go away easily, but Koei Thickness gets it done at the end of the day. Another grappling performance, went 2-14. Wins round one, loses round two, rebounds at round three. Good win for Colby Thickness. He'll improve to 8-1 in the bantamweight division. We're excited to have you, Colby. We're excited to see what you can do. Now, in terms of his who he should fight, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think Colby Thickney should fight as someone coming off of the Contender Series. I think we're talking about the winner of this matchup going down between the Fighting Nerds guy and Charles Jourdain's younger brother. I think the winner of that should fight Colby Thickney's. But, hey, maybe we'll bless him with someone else. But, yeah, picked up a good win. Just have no idea how Josias Moussassa survived that rear naked choke. As for Moussassa, two straight losses. Dude clearly has no ground game, which is just really bad on him. 0-2 in the UFC. They may invite him back, and he might be someone who fights a Contender Series person, but in my book, I've seen enough from Moussassa. I don't really see a ceiling for him, but I do want to add is that Josias Moussassa is only 26, go away for 4 years, fighting maybe the PFL, the UAE, Cage Warriors, getting LFA, getting any promotion you can, come back at 30. I think he might be good, but Colby, also 26, I just see, you know, a bit more opportunity there. And I do want to say, the fact he was an underdog, still shocking to me. No idea how Colby was an underdog this one. I felt he had this one in the bag pretty handsomely. And then, next up, Jamie Mullarkey, Rolando Bedoya, 3 of 17 on takedowns, another takedown fest here, but it was Rolando Bedoya who almost got Jamie out of there to end the fight. I mean, Jamie beats him up in round one. beats him up in round two. Round three, almost loses it, but manages to hang on. So Jamie Mullarkey improves to 18-8. First win since September of 2023. So do got to feel good for him. And as for Orlando Bedoya, 0-4 in the UFC, he is probably the only real fighter we can say is not coming back. If he comes back, if they give him one more shot, something's going on. He has some dirt. He got that Cedric Dumas dirt, if you ask me. But yeah, Jamie Mullarkey gets it done, is outstruck 46-43 significantly, but does damage rounds 1 and 2 to get it done. I don't really know what to do with Jamie Mullarkey. I mean, I'm sure you could get rewarded with, I saw someone throw the name Myron Santos, either the runner-up or winner of the Ultimate Fighter. I would love for him to fight him. You know, there could be an option there. But, you know, other than that, Esteban Rivovic, bounce back fight for Esteban could be an option. You could also have him fight maybe Jared Gordon. Jared Gordon's coming off a loss. Actually, you beat Jared Gordon last time out. That fight just happened last weekend. I'm trying to think. Jared Gordon was dominating, and then he just gets randomly knocked down. I don't even know, but yeah, probably an aging veteran or young up-and-comer for Jamie Mullarkey and for Orlando Bedoya. I don't freaking know. Let's have him fight Francis Ngannou for all I care. Next up, second-to-last prelim, Cam Rowston knocks out Andre Petroski. One of my favorite knockouts of the night. Doesn't get a performance bonus. So, little questionable there, but excellent work. Excellent work for Cam Rowston, man. Came in as the underdog. I was really leaning Andre Petroski all week. Eventually switched to Cam last second. He improves to a just amazing, amazing five-fight winning streak here. Gets his fifth career knockout, and the record improves 13-3. And yeah, this dude fought August 19th. Won in the Contender Series. Gets in and now has a knockout. Great win. Great win for Cam in the middleweight division. I'm excited to have him. I really am. I think the middleweight division will benefit from him. He's just this tall, lengthy city kickboxer, and he's coming to avenge. There's a lot of song. That's what he is. He's from the city kickboxing. Good stuff. 30 years old. Oh, you know, a lot of potential with him. Now, who could he fight at middleweight? I just don't know his ceiling. You know, I know Kyle Daukaus is fighting Gerald Meerschaert, loser of that, for Cam Rowston. I was also, I know Andre Munoz is taking on Emin Shabazian, winner or loser of that versus Cam. You know, I think Cam is going to have a lot of options about who he can fight, but this dude has a lot of potential, and I'm excited to see, especially when 12 of your 13 wins are by finish, then you draw some eyes. For Andre Petroski, I always hate Andre Petroski for the fact that he has so much potential and just doesn't have a chip. You know, no chin here, no chin against Emin Shabazian, no chin against Shaka Malkoon, no chin against Michelle Pereira, and that's what's going to hurt him. In his career, he falls to 13-6, two-fight losing streak now, and I think they'll give him another run, and probably if he, probably the next fight he loses in the UFC, they're going to cut him. But, I mean, it's not going to get better for Andre Petroski here. There's at one point he was fighting Michelle Pereira, who was ranked, and I saw a lot of potential there, but that's 2 years ago. So, I don't really know what to do with Andre Petroski. I don't know if there's an upcoming fight at middleweight. What's going on at 320? We got any unranked middleweights? We got Ateba Gaudier and Ozzie Diaz. Yeah, if Ateba Gaudier gets past Ozzie Diaz, like I think, let's run that fight. Next, if Andre Munoz beats Edmund Shabazian, let's have Andre Munoz take on Andre Petroski. I think that would be a fun fight as well. But domination from Cam Rowston, they did him so dirty not giving him a contract, and I won't forgive the UFC for that. They really should have given him a UFC contract. Or not a contract, a bonus. They should have given him the bonus there. The 50K performance bonus should have went to him. Then the final prelim came around, and Navajo Sterling just couldn't get Rodolfo Bellotto out of there. 30-27, 30-27, and 29-28. This was just like, I'm now expecting this from Navajo, where Navajo looks good in these fights, but just can't put his guys out of there. And I think that's just been something really adamant here. He's 3-0 in the UFC, three fights in a calendar year, and 8-0. 8-0, I mean, but had a nasty knockout on last season's Contender Series, and since couldn't put away Tuco Tucos, couldn't put away Ivan Arzayan. Him not being able to put away Adolfo Bellotto was just kind of just a bit baffling to me. Outstrikes him 81-43 significantly. I don't know. Rodolfo did have like two moments where he landed takedowns. But other than that, went 2 of 6. Couldn't do anything with them. So Rodolfo Bellotto has not won since December 2023. Like, this dude has the weirdest UFC record. He is 1-1 on Damas Contender Series and 1-1-1 with a no contest. I mean, this dude is, I've never seen someone debut in the UFC and have four different results with a win, a draw, a no contest, and a loss. So Rodolfo Bellotto, he'll be back. I mean, I don't know who he's going to fight. I have no idea who Rodolfo Bellotto is going to fight. How about Rodolfo Bellotto, Ivan Arslan? Or we just run Rodolfo Bellotto versus Modestus Bukauskas. Could be another name on my radar. You could also have him fight Marcin Prichinia. A lot of options there. But for Navajo Sterling, It gets really tricky what to do with this kid. You know, he's clearly talented. He clearly has the skill set, but at 27, 50% KO ratio, I don't know his ceiling. I don't know how high I want to raise him for fighting someone. So I'm not going to say a ranking spot is up next. Jimmy Crute would get that before him, but maybe like your Alonzo Menifields of the world. Your actually, who did Alonzo Menifield go? I actually have exactly who I want. Omar Sy. I want to see Omar Sy fight Navajo Sterling. That's the fight I want to see. I think that would be super competitive, super intense. That's my prediction right there. Or even the guy, is it Julius Walker? Julius Walker would also be a really good fight. Yeah, I think he beat Rafael Sequeira last out. So Julius Walker versus Navajo or Omar Sy. Those would be some fantastic fights. Then we got into the main card, and Tom Nolan. I mean, I just got to give it to him. Really got to give it to Tom Nolan here. Super impressive. Gets a submission. Tom Nolan getting a submission. This dude is a knockout artist through and through, and instead gets the round one rear naked choke, 50K performance bonus. Amazing work. Amazing work from Tom Nolan here. I mean, really just stayed on Charlie Campbell, swarmed him, landed a takedown immediately. Immediately transitions into the rear naked chokehold position, locks it up, easy money, not even close, not even close. Tom Nolan, 4-fight winning streak now, he's 4-1 in the UFC. I really thought this guy was done for January 2024, getting knocked out in a minute by Nicholas Mota, has since bounced back and has looked better, 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 and finally perfect in these performances here. So Tom Nolan, I mean, lightweight division, look out. Look down. We could run Jamie Mullarkey, Tom Nolan, if we want to keep bumping up Tom Nolan with these victories. But Australians had themselves a day. They were dominating, and it continued here. Super, super impressive stuff from Tom Nolan. And yeah, I'd love to see him get a good opponent, get a good name on his resume next. Maybe Bobby King Green. You know, if we want to test him with that, I could get behind that as well. As for Charlie Campbell, I mean, this dude hadn't fought since April of 2024. So to be fair, you know, he's 2-1 in the UFC, 9-3 professionally. I'd like to see him get back. In fact, maybe even Charlie Campbell versus Jamie Mullarkey would be a good matchup to run. But inactivity clearly has hurt him. Just get more active and you'll start to look better. My boy, good stuff over there. Now, let's get into the controversy of the night. You know, we almost made through a whole UFC card without having a controversy. And lo and behold, we do. Neil Magny, Jake Matthews. Now, to be fair, I was really going to go with Neil Magny here, and I went with Jake Matthews, and I ate it. I ate it. The ultimate gatekeeper, Neil Magny, got it done. But end of, I think it was either round one or round two, because you had a submission attempt from Jake Matthews in every round. Either round one or round two. I'm pretty sure it's round two. Neil Magny looked like he was out, and Jim Perdillo stops the fight with a second left in the round, and Neil isn't out. But he stopped the fight. He waved it off. He pulled Jake Matthews off him and waved his arms. And then went back on his decision. Actually, it was round two. I remember it was round two because it was the fight looked like it was wraps. Because Jake Matthews had dominated Neil through the first two rounds. Okay? And then we head to round three. Neil Magny, after Jake Matthews had thought he won, dials it up, lands two takedowns, locks in a darce, and ends the fight with a submission. Which, by the way, Neil Magny, get himself, he had his fifth career submission here. I mean, got to give him his props. This is not Neil Magny's fault. This is not Neil Magny's fault at all. Improves the 31-14. Two-fight winning streak. In 2025, he's 2-0 with two finishes. Come on, Neil Magny. Come on, boy. Good for you. Is he still even in the rankings? No, we got to get him in the rankings. But this is just an L for the ref. Because Neil Magny, it's not his job to be like, oh, actually, I was out. No, because he wasn't actually out. But yeah, really tough stuff for Jake Matthews. I really feel for him. I really do. This is his first submission loss since March of 2021. First time he's been finished since that, too. And this snaps his winning streak. So Jake Matthews, 31 years old, still not ready for the rankings. It's insane to see it. It really is. Now, what's next for him? There's an insanely goofy main event going down. November 8th, if you didn't know, Gabriel Bonfim is taking on Randy Brown. I mean, that is quite possibly the most random main event ever possibly made. It would make more sense to put two random women's flyweights up there. It would have been made more logical sense to have Macy Barber versus Karine Silva be the main event. But no, it's unranked Randy Brown taking on ranked Gabriel Bonfim. So super random there, but the loser of that versus Jake Matthews, I think, is the move. And as for Neil Magny, look, he's 38 years old, and he hasn't fought Kevin Holland yet. It's time we run Kevin Holland. Win or lose against Mike Ballett, Kevin Holland, Neil Magny, you got to have those two fight. We can't keep avoiding those two fight each other. It is long overdue, and I'm ready to see it. I really am. I think it's time we run those two back. But Neil Magny, a little controversial win, but hey, end of the day, it was his job to win. It was his job to get it done, and you best bet that he did. Now, next up, featherweight division. This was probably one of the more boring fights of the night. Jack Jenkins, Ramon Tavares, just Jack Jenkins outclassing Ramon Tavares, you know, 32 season strikes in 16 round one, 29-20 in round two. Ramon goes 0-4 on takedowns, got taken down twice for 3 minutes of control time in round three. Did try and throw up, you know, a reversal in round three. But yeah, Ramon Tavares, I don't really see it for the UFC. I know he had a good knockout on Contender Series season 7, week 10, but that was 2 years ago, buddy. And you know, your only win is a split decision in 2024, January. Since then, lost in December 2024. One in September, you know, lost here, so October 2025. So, Ramon Tavares, not the most impressive since moving up from bantamweight to featherweight. I mean, if anything, drop back down, have him fight Colby Thickneys, or Josias Moussasa move up and have him fight him. She was matchmaking on the same card. But yeah, for Jack Jenkins, this does snap his, you know, little one fight losing streak. First win since August 2024. I don't know, just didn't really look that impressive. I don't even know, you know, what Jack Jenkins' abilities are. This was set up to really get him a big finish, and he couldn't really get it done, so a little bit disappointing. We do have a fight coming up between Ricardo Ramos and Conn Offley. I don't know if that's taking place at lightweight or featherweight, but I would like to see that matchup, or whoever wins that, whoever loses that, actually, let's have them fight Jack Jenkins. But yeah, run-of-the-mill fight for Jack. Ramon didn't really look that good. This fight was way too high up on the card. I mean, I usually was perplexed at why the heavyweights weren't here, why a ranked woman strawweight wasn't here, why freaking Cam Rousey and Andrew Petroski wasn't here, but yeah, just didn't work out. But then we end the night, 2-round-1 finishes, and the hometown guys win, so can't be too mad. Starting us off, Jimmy Crute versus Ivan Erzine. I mean, Jimmy Crute is the definition of, oh, wait a second, why don't I just take this guy down and submit him? And he literally shoots 2 of 4 takedowns, 2 minutes control time in a 3-minute, 19-second fight, and puts away Ivan Erzine. I mean, this was just easy work. It wasn't even close. Jimmy Crute gets it done. And hey, 2-0 now in 2025 since getting a draw earlier this year. And I mean, my boy Jimmy Crute here, 6th career submission. Happy for him. And people are already calling for a ranked opponent. And if I'm being honest, number 13th ranked Nikita Krylov, I can get behind that. I can get behind Nikita Krylov and Alonzo Menifield. Maybe even a Zhang Ming Yang. I think Jimmy Crute's ready for another run at the rankings. I really do. I mean, you get a co-main event shot. People are going like, dude, this guy literally is, you know, hasn't won. He's won one fight since 2020. Why is he getting a co-main event shot? You got to go out there and starch Ivan Erzlan. So, good win for Jimmy Crute. For Ivan Erzlan, went 0-3 in the UFC since debuting in September 2024. So, this dude's went 0-3 in a calendar year. I don't know if we want to keep him, if we want to cut him. I'm sure there's some light heavyweights coming off of the Contender Series that we could have him be fed to, but as right now, Ivan Erzlan will join Rolando Bedoya on my cut list, unless they have them just get fed to an up-and-comer. But Jimmy Crute, big stuff, gets the performance bonus, gets a beautiful finish, and yeah, excited to see what he does next. A lot of options here. I really think the Nikita Krylov fight will be a good fight, because it's also a good bounce back fight for Nikita Krylov, who has been in desperate need of a victory, especially after Dominic Reyes knocked him out. Which, speaking of the man, Dominic Reyes, Carlos Ulberg, yeah, as we all know, Carlos Ulberg just makes easy work of Dominic Reyes. Kind of sad, you know, I'm not like mad or anything, because I really do like Carlos Ulberg, but as a Dominic Reyes fan, the comeback is stopped here, 4 minutes, 27 seconds, just really like they're going back and forth trading, and then, you know, I mean, it was really even striking, it was really like 5 strikes to 11, and then, or 5 strikes to 7, and then, you know, Carlos clips him, down he goes, clips him again as he's falling, and then lands one little follow-up shot. That was that. So Dominic Reyes goes down again. Can't even believe it. So of 5 career losses, knocked out in 4 of them. That's not good. That really isn't good. But, you know, I was aware that his wins were all over just like good opponents for Reyes, you know, Dustin Jacoby, Anthony Smith, Nikita Krylov. But yeah, Carlos Ulberg, good win for him. Improves the 14-1, 9-fight winning streak. Of those 9 wins, he has 6 finishes. So Ulberg will be taking on the winner of UFC 320. So this upcoming weekend, October 4th. The October 4th main event between Magomed Ankalaev and Alex Pereira. Winner's going to be taking on Carlos Ulberg. Yeah, Carlos Ulberg next for a title shot. Easy work for him. And 34 years old, you know, is on the come up. But yeah, I really like his odds in both of those fights. I will say, Alex Pereira, I don't really see him winning and defending light heavyweight belt. I think Alex Pereira is in the latter stages of his career. So we're going to mention this coming up on our predictions podcast, which will drop in 2 days. But I just really think that Alex Pereira is kind of done win or lose here at light heavyweight. So for Carlos Ulberg, whether it's versus Magomed Ankalaev, whether it's even, in my mind, a vacant shot potentially against the winner of Khalil and Jan. Like, Carl Ulbrich is fighting next for the belt. And when I look at all the opponents, I really like Ulbrich's chances to become the next champion. I really do. Kind of do what Israel Adesanya couldn't do and win the light heavyweight championship. Since they're both from City Kickboxing, I like Ulbrich's chances there. There isn't an if, and, or but. You know, even if Khalil or Jiri win, you cannot deny a 9-fight win streak and coming off a round one knockout in a main event. So, good work for Carl Ulbrich. Really like that. As for Dominic Reyes, you know, he's ranked number 7. I'm thinking winner, if Hazmat Mirzakhanov beats Volkan, they'll probably give him that shot. If Bogdan Guskov doesn't fight Jan Blachowicz, they might have him fight that. And even, why don't we just run Johnny Walker versus Dominic Reyes? Actually, screw that. Johnny Walker versus Dominic Reyes is such a fun fight I would love to see. Someone's going to sleep in round one. Let's just run that fight. Easy money. So, UFC Perth, super successful, one of the better fight nights of the year. I've been slowly ranking my main events, and I don't even know where to rank this main event. I mean, it's hard to rank a main event when Carl Ulbrich really just knocks about Dominic Reyes, but it was an entertaining knockout. It was in front of a home crowd, and it's exactly how you love to end the night. So, out of 12 fights, I mean, I am not going to complain when we get 6 finishes. 50% finish rate on card is super good. So, UFC Perth, really like it. I don't know how ticket sales do, so I don't know if UFC is going to be coming back here, especially with poor ticket sales, but overall, I enjoyed the card. Now, we look at UFC 320, which I could say has one of the most payable main cards I've seen in a while. Abusmagomedov, Joe Pyfer, Josh Emmett, Yusuf Zalal, Jiri and Khalil, like we mentioned, Merab and Corey Sandhagen, and Magomed Ankalaev and Alex Pereira. So, 2 title fights. Former champion Jiri Prochazka, former title challenger Khalil Roundtree Jr., former interim title challenger and Josh Emmett, guy in Yusuf Zalal was on a crazy win streak, obviously Joe Pyfer on the come up. Also on the prelims, I mean, Ateba Gaudier set up for a big knockout over Ozzy Diaz. Edmund Shahbazyan looking to continue his career revitalization. The 13-0 Fareed Bashra looking to get a win. Jusang Yu takes on Daniel Santos, and Jusang Yu is coming off of one of the best KOs of the year. Top 10 women's bantamweights in Macy Chazon and Yana Santos. Patchy Mix takes on a KWS champion in Jacob Wickelox. I mean, Patchy Mix, this is a guy who was 3rd fight on the main card literally in June and is now the 4th fight in on the prelims. So, that says a lot. You'll see Ramiz Brahmaj and Austin Vanderford chilling on the prelims there. That's going to be a banger. Puna Heli Soriano and Nikolaev Erichtaninov. I sent someone going to sleep there. I can just see it. And as for the opener, it's Veronica Hardy and Brogan Walker. I'm just going to assume one of them is from Las Vegas because that fight has no appeal whatsoever. But yeah, new pay-per-view coming up. I cannot wait to cover it. And also, the next time we speak, we'll drop our NFL Week 5 predictions. And I'll also go over Daniel's guitar series. What happened if we were getting a new contract? So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll send you all on your way. Thank you guys so much for listening. My life is kind of crazy right now in a good way. So I'm really excited, really happy to go over all this. And hopefully I'll maybe have a studio soon. I really need a studio to really grow this podcast. But it would be crazy if I had some actual listeners. I don't know. Does anyone actually listen to this? Like, I actually kind of think about that. I've been recording this for so long. I know I have a lot of downloads, but I don't know if anyone listens to this. But hey, whether someone listens or doesn't listen, I'm happy to just keep pumping out video. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, have an amazing weekend. And of course, not weekend, have an amazing week. The week has just begun. It's a Monday, and we're going to upload this right now. It's like 8:30 at night. So I'll catch you guys next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.